Making your way home to you, the all-night driver out in your cab alone. To you waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Amanda Hill, here with my co-host Jamie Partridge.
Hey, Amanda.
Hey, Jamie. And we're in the room with a bunch of troublemakers. Marge Hogan and Robert Cozy are teachers who went out on strike in Vancouver, Washington last fall. Hello, Marge and Robert.
Hi.
Hello.
And also with us is Johanna Brenner, coordinator of the Northwest Labor Notes Organizing Committee, which is sponsoring the April 6th Troublemakers School. Hello, Johanna.
Hi.
Johanna, why don't you kick off with a brief overview of the Troublemakers School to give our listeners a sense of the Troublemakers wing of the labor movement and the importance of this event, which happens only once every 2 years in the Portland area.
Sure, I'm happy to do that. So Labor Notes was founded in 1973 by radicals who believe, I think correctly, that in the end, the bosses depend on our ability and willingness to work. And if we organize ourselves, we have power. We have power at our workplace. We have power with the people who employ us. And we ultimately will have power, people power, for the changes that we need in society. So this vision was that labor unions are an important organization of working people's struggle. And if they're bureaucratic, if they're top-down, if they're more interested in making deals than they are in actually defending workers' working conditions, then they're not doing their job. So the idea was to, through Labor Notes, which is a monthly magazine, newspaper, to give working people all over this country the tools they need to actually exercise the power that is in their hands. At some point, I don't remember when, Labor Notes started having national conferences. The idea is get all these people together who are doing radical, innovative organizing and let them share their knowledge and experience and teach one another. So that conference, the National Labor Notes Conference, happens every 2 years. And in 2013, we here in Portland decided to have our own conference. We called it a Troublemaker School for the people in the Northwest area because there was no conference for anyone to go to. So when there's a conference here, we organize here to send people to the national conference. And on off years, which is this year, we organize a local Troublemaker School. And it's a place for skill building, sharing experiences, and for people to also get to know each other across unions, because, you know, it's important that ultimately we have networks that extend from nurses to construction workers to, building service workers and teachers.
All right. Thank you, Johanna. And Marge and Robert, give us a sense of what going on strike last fall meant for you and how that experience moved you to want to participate in this Troublemaker School.
I can start with that. So going on strike last fall in the Southwest Washington area was a huge step, especially because as a fourth-year educator, there's kind of that nervous of beginning to, like, not wanting to make anybody too upset and rock the boat too much. But knowing that, like, I have a master's degree and I was making less than what I made when I worked in the coffee industry as a barista per year, and it was hard to provide for my family. My wife and I had just had our daughter. She was turning two. My wife was still working full-time, and she had wanted to kind of pursue her own business and passion. And going on strike meant fighting for wages for all across our team, but particularly for lower-end educators who could then make this a sustainable career. Helping organize my school do that gave me a passion to kind of organize and bring us together and say, look, we can actually participate. And that's kind of why I'm headed towards Troublemaker School, to have a passion of just continuing to learn to organize amongst our staff members and be able to bring back good skills that help everybody see that a strong working and middle class is necessary to have a profitable society. And to do that, we can organize and be part of a union, and a strong union is on our way to making a strong middle class.
Marge?
Yeah, I would echo that, and as I served as one of two strike coordinators, and I think that it was really exciting to see folks who have maybe felt frustrated by their working conditions and students' learning conditions. Remember that if you are in education, just like many public sector jobs, you kind of have two bosses, the district that you work for directly, and then in a sense the state is also your boss, and sometimes state-level funding issues can feel just insurmountable. And so to have people step up into positions of leadership, as Robert did, and to kind of see how together we can make change was really empowering to people, I think.
Marge, you're also on the organizing committee for the Troublemakers School, and I understand that we're bringing a teacher from the recent Los Angeles strikes. Can you tell us what motivated you to bring them up?
Yeah, so Labor Notes is helping to bring up Arlene Inouye, who's a union leader there in Los Angeles. Many people saw on the news in January about a major teacher strike in Los Angeles, really exciting 6 days of, I believe it was 6 days or a week of striking, ending in a pretty inspiring contract victory. Those teachers had been for a long time without a contract, and one thing we're excited about learning from having Arlene there as our keynote, but then also participating in, she's going to be participating in a teacher-focused workshop or education-focused workshop called Striking for the Schools Our Students Deserve. There's a lot of similarities, I think, in our organizing context, but a lot of differences as well. So their district is huge. I think they have about 600,000 students, and what that means is differences in sort of the landscape of communicating with community members, making sure that community members have input into what they want to see in their schools, also families. Our district, by comparison, is still kind of a small town. We've got 1,800 members, so it's a smaller local. But then there are some similarities, too. I think that Los Angeles teachers face the same negative messaging around, well, why are you being disruptive? Students are going to be out of school, and it's disruptive to their where are these kids going to be during the day? Where are they going to eat? We faced much of that same message. And it's just like people, I think, in other sectors, nurses and bus drivers hear that your work action is putting vulnerable patients or bus riders at risk. We know that, of course, the trouble is already with us. We didn't make the trouble. We're working to improve student learning conditions and our working conditions. One thing that I think is not visible in the news when we look at the UTLA strike action was that there were years of organizing that went into building member caucuses and leadership within members that were the kind of union active educators who were willing to tackle long-term and systemic issues. Building that kind of power is very difficult, and these workshops at Troublemakers School are designed specifically for folks who want to build those long-term solutions. It's not like UTLA teachers or we in Evergreen or across Washington just woke up one day and said, you know what, we all want to not go to work tomorrow. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work that goes into that. So I guess those are the things we're looking forward to in that keynote.
Great. So that brings us to a big picture discussion about bringing community issues into labor struggles. The LA teachers won serious victories for parents and students. For example, immigrant parents facing deportation would get legal representation from the district. Green spaces in schools, elimination of metal detectors in schools, the capping of the privatization of schools, and reduction in class size, reduction in standardized testing, all these things impacting students and parents. Other unions are also engaging in this type of community bargaining or bargaining and striking for the common good. Now, one of these workshops on offer on April 6th at the Troublemaker School will bring us local hospital workers who are bargaining for better housing and transit, as well as wages, hours, and working conditions. And do any of you want to weigh in on this topic of bargaining for the common good? Marge or Robert?
So first off, I used to live in LA, so I got to see kind of some of the A lot of my friends worked in LA Unified who were teachers, and so I kind of saw their daily struggles. So I was really proud to kind of see them finally get some of those big victories. I think it's important, as Marge had said earlier, it's not like teachers across Southwest Washington or in Evergreen School District woke up one day and said, you know what, I just don't want to go to work. It had been fighting for not just better wages for teachers, we were fighting for our students as well, and trying to communicate that to our community, which I think we did really effectively during our strike, was that like a good wage for a teacher meant that you would attract better teachers to the classroom who were more able to deal with some of those classroom issues. And then also standing strong by our last contract bargain to say that like bargaining for wages did not mean that we now are going to put our own students at risk. Every time we kind of came out with a new offer from the district, they always tried to slide something in that took away a protection we had won for our students. And we were unwilling to satisfy that just to get a higher wage. I think it's also really important because we have a lot of students who are in need of social services, mental health services. We have a large population in Evergreen of transition students, so students who are experiencing homelessness in one form or another. And so I think it's important that as a union, we help communicate that we want to be there for our students and their parents and our population by bringing together and bargaining for those things like smaller class sizes, providing community services for families who are homeless or struggling with food, providing services for those who are here undocumented, and not making it fearful.
Well, I'll just mention also that another important industry where this kind of bargaining for the common good and the sense that the workers in the industry are, that their working conditions are the living or helping conditions of the people that they're serving. And this is true of so many different kinds of jobs where what the worker experiences ultimately has a huge effect on the people that the worker is serving. And so in hospitals all over the country now, there have been struggles on safe staffing. And safe staffing is a really important, like with the teachers, you know, you can't do a good job if you have too many patients to cover. So I think this idea of bargaining for the common good, which maybe began in one place, is beginning to spread as workers understand that to get the community on your side, all you have to do is educate your community about the ways in which your working conditions and the things you experience at work have a profound effect on the community. So I'm very excited about this direction that's going in among teachers, nurses, and healthcare workers in particular.
Thanks, Johanna. Part that I really love about what you guys have just said is that we're not bargaining just for our union, we're bargaining for our community. Mm-hmm. And that's truly what I'm in this business for sure. So besides you know, having some really big picture discussions at the Troublemaker School, we're going to have some basic classes as well. And they're based on the Labor Notes book, Secrets of a Successful Organizer. In fact, we're going to have two of the book's authors as trainers, Mark Brenner and Al Bradbury. I've been involved with Secrets trainings in the past, so we've been doing some trainings in the Portland Association of Teachers Hall, and we've been teaching the classes that are coming right out of that book, Assembling Your Dream Team, Swing into Action and Beating Apathy are just the cornerstones of really getting your union on a path to being able to bargain a fair contract for the employees as well as the community.
Yeah, and I think some of these trainings we're going to offer in a couple different modules so folks would have an opportunity to get, you know, how to have a basic organizing conversation, how to identify leaders, how to map your workplace, all those basics of organizing on the shop floor, which is really the bedrock of building worker power. If you just turned in, this is this is KBOO Portland Labor Radio. You've been listening to Marge Hogan and Robert Cozy, teachers from Southwest Washington, Johanna Brenner of the Northwest Labor Notes Organizing Committee, and of course, Jamie Partridge and Amanda Hill, co-hosts. So, full disclosure, Amanda and I are also on the Troublemaker School Organizing Committee. I'm bottom lining the panel on unionizing your workplace. We'll have union organizers and rank-and-file workers who have recently organized unions here in Portland, including workers from the Little Big Burger shops who just went public. There's about 10 Little Big Burger shops in the Portland area, and they're going the route of the Burgerville Workers Union, attempting to make Portland the ground zero for fast food workers unionizing. We'll hear from people who have used the assaulting strategy, that is getting a job at a workplace for the purpose of organizing a union. We'll be hearing folks from healthcare industries, from hospital, from the building and construction trades, all have different techniques and methods of organizing a union at their workplace. So especially those listeners who are interested in figuring out how to organize a union at your workplace, that's the workshop you want to be at.
So, Joanna, can you talk to us a little bit more about the curriculum? One of the classes includes a workshop on building an inclusive workplace culture.
So one of the big challenges that we face in organizing is that we are very divided by divisions, very, very deep divisions in our society. We're divided around by racism. We're divided by sexism. We're divided by homophobia, hostility toward people who are different. And that societal culture seeps into our workplaces. And unions for a long time, I think, didn't see that as particularly a place that they needed to focus. And that's changing now. And we're really excited to have people coming to talk about how they were able to build and what they are doing to build an inclusive workplace culture. Because again, that's where it all starts. You know, if you don't have an inclusive workplace, you're not going to have an inclusive union. That workshop is going to look at, in particular, what people call microaggressions. These are not the big things, you know, which everybody thinks, oh, well, you know, if you do something like you fire somebody unfairly, well, that's, you know, but what about all these jokes? What about the fact that people don't come in and sit with one another in the lunchroom? You know, what about offhand remarks? What about even for women, compliments, you know, on your looks? I mean, these are all ways that ultimately you're bringing this oppressive culture on the society into your workplace and making people feel other and excluded. So we're having a really exciting panel, I think, of two speakers from the construction trades, which, isn't that amazing? That's the place where really good work is being done on how to stand up to oppressive behaviors, but more importantly, even how to create a workplace culture where everyone agrees that this is not the kind of thing you want to see. So one of the people coming to speak on that panel, Jocelyn Baker, is from the County Workers, AFSCME 88, and they just put some really interesting language into their last contract over how the management and the workers can deal with moving away from this kind of everyday, kind of unexamined microaggressions that occur. So, and then we were having some people from the trades. The carpenters have an organization called Sisters in the Brotherhood, which is for women in the carpenter trades, and they're doing some great work, and they're including conversations about an inclusive workplace into their apprentice training, which they'll be talking about. Very important, because you're getting people as they enter the union before they can get acculturated to a toxic culture, and you're helping to change that culture to something way more positive.
Great. Externally, the public sector, this is one of the external problems that we're being hit with. A severe blow by the Supreme Court, the Janus decision, which eliminated fair share fees for union representation in the public sector. At the Troublemaker School, we'll hear from public sector unionists about how they're organizing to maintain and build membership in this open shop environment. I'm from the Letter Carriers Union. We've been an open shop forever, so we have some experience with maintaining union membership despite the fact that people do not have to pay their fair share. We have a 97% unionization rate in my union, and so one of our leaders is going to be talking about how do we do that. And internally, Amanda, what about this workshop?
So internally, many unions are leaving many of their members behind. They're not including everybody. And so Democracy is Power is the title of one of our classes. And what it's going to focus on is re-engaging your members to create a member-driven union. Excuse me. And I've had a little bit of experience with this in my own union, where it felt like we were becoming more and more of a staff-driven union without genuine input from its members. And so one of the things we did was create a caucus and start asking questions and finding out what people really wanted, doing some surveys, doing a lot of meetings, talking one-on-one with people. And we did many things. We elected new leadership. We revamped our constitution. We created a lot more trainings, and we created a steward assembly where our stewards are actually making decisions within our union, and it has really changed the engagement level at our union, and it's been really exciting to look at. Can you, Marge or Robert, the kind of things that you've done in your union that have created more power?
Yeah. The year I joined, 4 years ago, we were in the midst of negotiating a contract. And one of the things that our union president at the time, Rob Lutz, had done is the union leadership had really done a good job of getting together and understanding, helping members understand that union is a verb and that we should work together. And we even still use that today in our meetings, that union is a verb and that we are our union, right? And so in my own building, what I've done is I've done surveys and talked to members. I make it a point to try to connect with members probably once a month, both through our regular meetings, but then also one-on-one, go hear concerns and take those and be able to approach our administration with them to kind of help them recognize that our members do feel one way or another. A great example is members were feeling pressure to pass students. And so I started talking to some members, and then we put together a survey and were able to bring it forward and say, hey, look, like, whether or not your intention is to put pressure on people to pass students, that is what's being communicated. And was able to win there to help our building reorganize and change the way they messaged that so that members could actually speak to why they felt that pressure and then kind of talk about their own grading practices and systems so that we could have true equity in our grading practices and not just give lip service to it.
So finally, the Troublemaker School will include two workshops of particular importance to public sector workers: Contract Campaigns That Win and Fixing Oregon's Budget Crisis. Teachers and other government workers have to wage contract campaigns at the same time they're fighting at the legislative level for funding. Anyone want to weigh in on the importance of these two workshops for the listeners who might be tempted to attend the Troublemaker School?
Yeah, I think our local, like many others, has this dilemma of should we be working more on state level issues that affect our working conditions and student learning conditions, or should we be focusing more on local communities? And the answer, of course, is yes. I think that when you think about where to spend your energy as a union, it's important to remember that your members are interested in lots of different things. And so just like Robert was talking about, that process of having one-on-one conversations is key to building leadership, because you're identifying what it is that members want to work on and figuring out how to connect them to that union work that we can do together. So if you're somebody who's sitting at home on the couch thinking, gosh, I wish my union would do this or that, it's a great idea to attend and connect with others. All the workshops that are there have really practical solutions, oftentimes for figuring out how to get members involved, so that it's not just the same group of leaders working on all the priorities. You'll find that many of your brothers and sisters in the union are interested in legislation. Others might not be, but they'd be interested in direct action. There's people who aren't interested in direct action that are wanting to talk to communities. So within your union, you have the capacity for many, many things.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something briefly about the Oregon budget crisis, the roots of it. I think this is such an important workshop because we are inundated from the Oregonian about the fact that it's PERS members and their, the state retirement system that takes care of retired public servants. And the vast majority of people who receive PERS are not these big administrators who are double dipping and making a fortune. But yet the Oregon Business Alliance, business lobbies, and unfortunately I think many of our legislators kind of think that the PERS is a problem, when actually the problem is that we passed a very draconian ballot measure that seriously limits our ability to tax commercial property. We're in the middle of a 10-year building boom here, and all of that new value coming online is being taxed at a rate that was decided, 20 years ago, or when that ballot measure was passed. So there's a real struggle going on in our state between first identifying the problem and then coming up with good solutions. And one of the big things we see in our legislature right now is all this to-ing and fro-ing about taxation, and are they going to raise some kind of business tax in order to fund education, and the gap between what the educators think is necessary and what the state legislature is willing to do is already abysmal. They're talking about $1 billion when we really need $4 billion. So I think that this is an opportunity for people. Mark Brenner will be doing this workshop. He's really knowledgeable, both about the budget itself and also about creative ways that we could do new taxes that are truly progressive and would really help to fund the things we need. The other thing, just briefly, about the contract campaigns that win. Again, I think Marge said it really well, but this is a building block process. You know, you start at the lowest level and you organize like crazy, and you get to the point where you can actually win a contract campaign because you have a credible strike threat, because you have community support, because your members really understand what's at stake. So I think that I'm excited about this, particularly the contract campaigns that win workshop, because everyone's afraid of strikes. Everyone's afraid that things won't work. And here we see that if you're well organized and you know what you're doing, you really can have a contract campaign that wins.
Thank you, Johanna, and Marge and Robert. This wraps up for this evening's Labor Radio Show. For those listeners who are interested in registering and coming to this exciting Troublemakers School, which is on Saturday, April 6th at the Northwest Carpenters Institute on 158th near Airport Way, just go online to labornotes.org/PDX. That's labornotes.org/PDX and register. This is a really affordable day. You can... It's $10. We are going to have some lunch and some snacks available as well, and you'll get to meet the most awesome people in the Portland-Vancouver area.
You've been listening to Labor Radio, and this And Marge Hogan and Robert Cozy of Southwest Washington Educators, and Johanna Brenner, the coordinator of Northwest Labor Notes Organizing Committee. I'm Jamie Partridge with my co-host Amanda Hill. Thanks to Mike, our engineer, staying tuned for Prison Pipeline.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Challenging the Both Sides Narrative, Difference Between Fascist and Antifa Movements in the Trump Era, on Thursday, April 4th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Cider Riot in Portland. Challenging the Both Sides Narrative is a talk by Dr. Stanislav Vysotsky. This talk will provide an overview of contemporary fascist and anti-fascist movements with a focus on the key differences between them. Again, that's Challenging the Both Sides Narrative, Difference Between Fascist and Antifa Movements in the Trump Era, on Thursday, April 4th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. This evening, we are here with Rushni Takor. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. We experienced some amazing program that you helped put together a month or two ago. Can you talk about that program?
Sure. It's called the CRCI Comedy School. And we started it in January of 2018.